when you talk about...
We have 15 seconds.
I think we have to oppose the idea that a military can do whatever it wants. We have to oppose the idea that there are no civilians in wartime. We know that there are civilians down in Gaza. Gaza is a place under occupation, and it was not a war. We have to oppose these ideas, and we have to oppose it any way we can. And we need the support of American people. We need the support of people around the world to do that. Thanks.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Craig and Cindy Corey, speaking to us from Haifa. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fell, Sarah Mata, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, and so many others. I want to thank everyone for being there. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from Tampa.
This is your WUSB concert billboard for Monday, August 28th. The Power Squids will be at the Tap and Barrel in Smithtown, 8:30. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, August 29th. Stone Temple Pilots will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 8 p.m. Miles to Dayton will be at Harborfront Park in Port Jefferson, 6:30. Martini Garden, Oogie Wawa, and My Summer will be at 89 North in Patchogue. Your WUSB concert billboard for Thursday, August 30th. B.O.B. will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m. Persona, Casual Hearts, Life Between Sleep, and The Walking Tree will be at 89 North in Patchogue. The Bread Freeze will be at the Saltwater Grill in West Hampton Beach, 6 p.m. This is your WUSB concert billboard for Friday, August 31st. Felix Cavalier will be at the Bolton Center in Bayshore, 8 p.m. The Primate Fiasco, Funkin' A, and Jelly Band will be at 89 North in Patchogue, 9 p.m. Opera A to Z by Long Island Opera. It's a free show. Bring your chairs and blankets to Shorefront Park in Patchogue, 7 p.m. Buddy Merriam Trio, mandolin and bluegrass music will be at the Maribel Tavern at Three Village Inn in Stony Brook, 9 p.m. Shecky and the Twang Tones will be at Fadley's Deli Pub in Patchogue, 9:30. Sean Lee and A.M. will be at the Knitting Factory in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Your WUSB concert billboard for Saturday, September 1st. Jason Mraz and Christina Perry will be at the Nikon at Jones Beach Theater in Wantagh, 7 p.m. Larry Chance and the Earls, Jay Siegel's Tokens, will be at the West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center, 8:30. The Bogeyman will be at the Stephen Talk House in Amagansett, 9 p.m. Young Rebel Goombas will be at the Prime Restaurant in Huntington. Gary Sellers and Bobby Nathan Band will be at BBQ in Patchogue, 8 p.m. Frank Renda will be at Samantha's Little Bit of Heaven in East Northport, 8 p.m. Ahmat Ali will be at Lobster Roll Northside, Baiting Hollow, 4 p.m. Kim Tetralt will be at the North Fork Tasting Room in Riverhead, 6 p.m. Your concert billboard for Sunday, September 2nd. Felix Cavalier will be at the Stephen Talk House in Amagansett, 8 p.m. Marshall Tucker Band and Stanton Anderson Band, Joe Rock and the All-Stars, will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury, 8 p.m. Lennon, reimagined by the Newtopians at City Winery in Manhattan, 8 p.m. Ace Frehley, Zebra Warrant, Facelift, and Craving Strange will be at the Brookhaven Amphitheater at Bald Hill in Farmingville, 3 p.m. Looking ahead to Tuesday, September 4th, Odd Future will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 8:30. Il Volo will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury, 10 p.m. And that's your concert billboard.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. In the middle of the Republican convention going on in Tampa, Florida, as even Mother Nature has shown up to protest. It's Hurricane Isaac making I guess Tropical Storm Isaac made an appearance yesterday and actually forced them to cancel the first day. And they don't make it up for some reason. I don't understand this. They don't make it up. They you'd think if they canceled the first day, they'd move it to, when does it end? It ends Thursday, so they'd have it on Friday. But no, they don't. They just cut it by a day, which tells me that they can just cut it, period. It's a waste of time. If they can cancel a day and not make it up, you know, that tells me that's a superfluous day. It's a day that doesn't matter. You know, it's like when it snows and you're in school, you can get a day off. Okay, maybe you can get 2 days off, and we'll just let that go because, you know what, those days don't matter. It's a bit of fluff in the school year. But you get to 3 and 4 and 5 days, all right, you know, you got to stay in school then during Easter week or whatever holiday we're going to cut back on because those days matter. Well, apparently, the Republican convention, at least, only 3 days matter. What would have happened if today got canceled, too? Would they have not made that day up as well? You know? And I'm not sure about the Democrats. Hopefully, there's another hurricane that'll hit them in North Carolina next week, and we can see how they deal with it. I mean, I'm all for fairness. And they both decided to have their conventions in hurricane season in the areas that get hit by hurricanes. So, gotta figure, you know, that's some kind of challenge to nature. Nature doesn't take challenges lightly. Now, I was looking into this. Actually, while the theme was playing, I was looking into this because that's when I do most of my preparation. And I noticed that the cost, I didn't know this before, the cost of the Republican National Convention is around $73 million for taxpayers. So the thing is, though, taxpayers elect to pay for this. There's apparently a little checkbox on the bottom of your tax form that says, do you want to contribute money to the... I don't know why anybody would check that, but apparently enough people do so that they have about $73 million to spend. And, you know, it just strikes me, I think that money would be better spent going to the moon or something like that. You know, every time NASA does something, there are all these people that raise their heads and say, I think that money would be better spent on this. Never for the military, never for the military, but always for NASA. Well, how about for the conventions? We start saying, yeah, you know what? The $73 million might be better off, you know, going to exploring an asteroid or something like that. Obviously, it would be better off paying for people, you know, to eat and sleep and things like that. But yeah, good luck having that be a priority anywhere. But, you know, just to give you a sense as to the tremendous gap here, NASA, their budget is, it's something, it's under $20 billion. That sounds like a lot of money. It is a lot of money, but it is NASA. You know, they're the only organization around that is in charge of, well, the universe, the whole rest of it. But by contrast, under $20 billion, by contrast, the military spends close to $700 billion every year. You know, I mean, if they took a year off, I think I've broached the subject before, but if they took a year off and didn't spend anything, except, you know, for paying the electric bill and the phone bill and all that, but if they didn't spend anything and we just didn't tell anybody about it, the next year they'd just resume and we'd still have a defense, we'd still have a military, we'd still have all the weapons and bombs and things like that, the things we hold so dear. They'd still be there. Might need a little oiling or whatever, but, you know, you don't need to spend that much every single year. Whereas Curiosity, that's a one-time expenditure. And it's going to keep providing data for years, decades. We'll be analyzing what Curiosity learns on Mars. And this is true of any scientific mission. The benefits just keep paying off, whereas you're paying for airplanes and tanks and things like that. Okay, you know, you bought them. Every year we keep spending more and more money on the same things. I know, it's not that simple. I know there's a lot of maintenance and I guess people expect to get paid in the military as well. I get it, but $700 billion really, you know, with just one country. One country. That is phenomenal. When you compare it to what people are complaining about, it really is staggering. This is what we should be complaining about. If we took 1 billion out of 700 billion. Do you think they'd notice? And you applied that 1 billion to, oh, I don't know, high speed rail or anything, really, anything in this country. $1 billion would make a tremendous difference. And they get 700 billion of them, or 700 of them, $700 billion every year from us. From us. Comes out of our pockets. It doesn't come from the trees. It doesn't grow on trees. It comes from taxes and various other forms of extracting money from the populace. Well, that's just what I see looking at the tremendous waste going on. And you know, the Republican convention is a very minimal example of that waste. Democratic convention also. Why are they necessary? I just got a bulletin on my phone saying that Mitt Romney has secured the number of delegates needed to win the Republican nomination for president. Really? This is what we... Is this a surprise to anybody? We knew this months ago. Why do we all need to go to Tampa, of all places, to have that confirmed for $75 million? What exactly do we gain from this? If we didn't have these stupid conventions of the mainstream parties, you know, would it go any differently? It's an excuse to have fun and to, you know, I guess get a little bit of attention. But boy, they get a lot of attention as it is. And I think they have a little too much fun. But that's just my opinion for what it's worth. Another thing that's my opinion that for what it's worth, and I'm getting into a lot of debates with people about this, and you might find it surprising. It's about censorship. I'm not for it. I'm against it. I don't like censorship of any sort. And I find censorship in the strangest places sometimes. There was one time I got into a real disagreement with people about this. I don't know what the situation was. I was somewhere in the Deep South. I think it was Tennessee. That's the Deep South, right? Yeah. And we were at some kind of hacker event down there. I don't know if it was Tennessee or some other state, but it was something where people were playing with their television sets inside a hotel. And there was, of course, pornography. And I noticed that on pornographic films in that particular hotel, maybe throughout the entire country, that they were censored. They were censored to eliminate anything that showed male genitalia. And even films where that was pretty much the theme. I'm not going to go into detail here, but let's just say the title of one of the films was Deep Throat. And I think you get the sense as to what that film is all about. I saw it here at Stony Brook when it debuted. Well, I don't know if it debuted, but it debuted at Stony Brook, and you know, it drew quite a crowd. In fact, it was a controversy here at the university because they advertised it in the student newspaper. Come see a showing of Deep Throat, and there was debate as to whether or not that should be allowed. And you know, I think maybe today it wouldn't be allowed. But the point is that film was unedited here, and down there it was. And I raised that issue. Why are they cutting scenes? And of course, the answer in typical homophobic manner was, well, nobody wants to see that. Not the point. Not the point at all. It's a work of art. And yes, it is a work of art. And it's created in a certain way. And it should be seen the way it was intended to be seen. And the fact that it's pornography just makes it all the more ironic. But now we move to current day and programs on television. And recently I started watching Breaking Bad, finally. Yes, people have been on me for years to see this, just haven't had the time. But finally I got around to seeing most of it. And I noticed someone gave me copies. Yeah, they gave me copies. Let's get this clear right now. I already pay for the channels that it's broadcast on. I already pay for them. It's on, AMC, which used to stand for American Movie Classics, and apparently they don't show very many movies now, so it must stand for something else. But it's a cable channel, and I pay for it, I think, three times over, because I have cable, I have satellite, and I have Canadian satellite, and it comes through on there, too, somewhere, on some other channel. Point is, I don't feel bad about asking a friend of mine to give me a copy that I could look at. And, you know, it was what I consider a preview copy. It was being able to see what this is like. And the first thing I noticed, apart from the glaring bug that was on the entire presentation. And the bug is that channel identifier that you see usually at the bottom right of the screen. We didn't used to have this years ago, back in the, I think, the 80s, possibly the 90s. We didn't have bugs all the time on TV channels. They had them overseas. That's where I first noticed them. And then they started bringing them over here. And they were supposed to be transparent, but more and more they became less transparent and more obnoxious. And then it led to other things going on the screen as well. Little indications of what you're watching now, what's coming up next. Sometimes there are tickers. Sometimes there are animated things going on. And that doesn't even bring into account what they do to the credits at the end of shows now, where they shrink them and do all kinds of other things. You don't hear closing theme music or anything like that. Well, I took exception to that right away. But then when I started watching the program, I realized this thing is censored. They're cutting certain words and certain scenes. And they're doing this on the channel that it's presented on in the first place. You know, it's not like you're watching something on commercial television and it's made for commercial television so that there's nothing that the network steps in and cuts because it's already cut by the time it gets to the air. This is something that is given to them, and then they sit around and say, no, we're going to cut that and we're going to bleep that word. And this is something on cable. This is something on a channel that's supposedly not a target of the FCC. They're doing this on their own. And the thing is, somebody there has determined certain words are acceptable, certain words are not acceptable. And all violence is acceptable. That's what's most amazing, is that I did not find a single violent scene. There's some pretty gruesome scenes. Did not find a single one of those that was edited in any way. But a shot of Bryan Cranston's ass was completely cut. So imagine, you know, someone's throat getting slit. That's okay. You can put that on TV. But Bryan Cranston's ass, no way. We got to cut that. Well, I'm sorry. I have to draw the line somewhere, and Bryan Cranston's ass is where I draw that line. This is something that NYPD Blue would have no trouble showing on ABC back in the 90s. And here we are watching a cable channel now, watching the premiere of a program that is made for that channel, and some pencil pusher someplace says, no, this is not appropriate for people who pay for that channel to watch. And I'm going to cut it out. And I'm also going to cut out any particularly strong language. And, you know, when you think about it, you're watching a dramatic presentation. You're watching somebody say a very bad word. Usually they're saying it with a great deal of emotion, a good deal of passion. It's called acting. And, yeah, you know, that's something that is said for a reason. When you use bad language, at least, you know, this is the way you're supposed to use bad language. When you use it, it should be to make a point. And in this particular program, it's made brilliantly. They don't do it very often. And this is the argument I get into with people who say, oh, there are so few scenes that are affected. Yes, but you know what? They're the most emotional scenes. They're the most riveting. And to suddenly have a second of silence in the middle of someone's shouting tirade where they're at the end of their rope, to me, that completely detracts, just like having the screen suddenly get shrunk in half because they're promoting the next program coming up next. It's just as distracting, annoying, and disrespectful to the work of art. And so I said, no, you know what? I can't watch this. In fact, this is probably why when I turned it on years ago, I turned it off, because when I see censorship, I'm just drawn away. It's offensive to me. That is what's offensive. But people that usually stand up for free speech aren't seeing the issue here. Basically, yeah, you know, I'm being nitpicky. I'm saying that, you know, it's something that doesn't really matter that much. If it doesn't really matter that much, they wouldn't have made it that way in the first place. You know, people create things and they want things to be seen the way they create them. You know, you can watch The Sopranos on Channel 11 here in New York, and it's a completely different program. Or you can watch it the way it was on HBO and see it the way it was intended. Which do you prefer? So there is a solution. The solution is to simply get the DVDs. I've actually bought all the DVDs now. Yeah, it had that effect on me. Not the censorship so much, the program. I like the program so much, I want to have copies of it so that I can watch it anytime and see it the way it was intended to be seen. But I find it ironic that the pirated copies are the ones that are censored. And the ones that come straight from the DVDs, which take a year or so to come out, they're the ones that that aren't. So I don't know if that's a marketing strategy. It's kind of a lousy one, but it's a game I'll have to play, I guess, because I'm not going to sit around and watch things that that are cut to ribbons. Even if it's one word in a season, you don't know. You don't know what is being cut. I mean, how would you know if something is cut if you didn't see it? And that's what makes censorship so so threatening, because it just changes the whole direction, changes your perspective on what it is you're watching. If you know something got cut, well, then you can be angry about it. But if you don't know it ever happened, you assume that's the way it was supposed to be. And oftentimes it just completely changes the whole tone and the impact. Now, you know, I'm not pushing for all kinds of bad language on commercial TV and nudity and things like that. I mean, people have certain places they go to avoid that kind of thing, and that's fine. You know, I don't think there should be adult language on Sesame Street. That's not why I watch it. You know, it's you don't see certain things in certain places. But where those things do exist, where they're supposed to exist, they should not have people who really don't get it coming in to mess with things, to mess with it, and turn it into something that is less offensive to somebody who was not even going to watch it in the first place. And the fact that violence is never an issue really speaks volumes. You know, to me, that's a lot more disturbing than someone's ass or hearing the F word. It's a lot more disturbing, and I wouldn't cut that either. But it says something about our society. It says that we do live in a very violent country, and we become kind of numb to this sort of thing. But the way to deal with it is not to pretend it's not there. But, you know, there is a flip side to this as well, because when I got the DVDs and I started watching them, I had to sit through no less than a minute of warnings about how piracy is a bad thing and how it's not a victimless crime. For Christ's sake, I bought the DVDs. I am watching the DVD I paid for, and I'm getting lectured about why it's bad to steal. You know, and the people who are being defined as thieves, do you think they're watching those warnings? No, they cut those warnings out. They cut those warnings out when they distribute it. Yeah, okay, one person who actually copies it from the DVD, I guess they might see that warning, but I don't think they're watching it. So that's really how Hollywood is its biggest enemy, because they lecture the wrong people. And they get people angry at them for the way they do business. And they trick people into doing things they wouldn't ordinarily do, buying things they shouldn't buy. So in any event, yes, censorship is something you should not stand for, whether it's in pornography or on premium cable or even on basic cable or on regular television as well. I mean, if something is presented in a certain way to start with, like an episode of The Simpsons or something like that, it's presented for the channel that it's going to be shown on, and that's how it should be aired. So if it's cut from that point, yeah, that's a problem. It's a real problem. So, yeah, you know, we need to pay attention. We need to get angry. Even if it's about what seem to be silly things, it does matter. And, yeah, I'll wait a year. I'll wait a year for season 5 if I have to. Because it's better to see it the way it was intended than to see it the way some idiot who doesn't get the show thinks you should see it. All right, that's all I have to say about that. Just it's been annoying me that I have to plead my case like this. I think I'm the only person that feels this way. I really do. Because everyone else wants immediate gratification. It's on TV. You want to watch it now. Yeah, but the way they present things sometimes, it's an insult. It's an insult to the viewers. And, I wish they'd go back to bugless TV, too. I wish they'd take those stupid bugs off and, not have them polluting the screen. And it's interesting because they say those bugs are there for your convenience, so you know what channel you're watching. Well, if that's the case, how come they take the bugs off when they're running commercials? You know, because the advertisers don't want those bugs there because they're an insult to the viewer. Yeah, that's why. Advertisers get what they want, but the people who create things, they've got to fight. All right, enough about that. Mass shooting. We had a mass shooting in New York. I don't mean to sound triumphant. That's just what a story. I'm sure you heard about this. And it wasn't a mass shooting. The mass media, they want a mass shooting, but they didn't get one here. The only mass shooting was by the police. And this was so apparent early on in the story, but the media would not report this. Even the NYPD was dancing around the issue, and it was pretty obvious what the story was. You had a guy that went into, I believe, a store where he used to work or some business and shot a guy that he had a beef with. Horrible thing. Kills the guy and then calmly walks away. Right by the Empire State Building. That's the big story, the fact that it was right by the Empire State Building. So he's walking around Fifth Avenue. Now, this construction worker witnesses this and starts tailing the guy so that he doesn't get away. Now, never mind the fact that people knew who he was when he shot the guy in the first place. They recognized him because he used to work there. But the construction worker obviously didn't know that, so he was tailing the guy so that he wouldn't get away. And he alerted a couple of cops. Well, what did the cops do? They immediately ran up to him, and he drew a weapon from a bag. He drew the same weapon, and they unleashed, what is it, something like 14 shots? Was it more? You know how they do it. They just basically, it's not like it used to be where they shoot once or twice. They unleash a barrage of bullets. And those bullets went all over the place. Some of them hit bystanders. Some of them hit big flower pots. And then shrapnel went and hit more bystanders. So a whole bunch of people, I think 9 people got wounded. And all of them from the police bullets. The commissioner of police, Raymond Kelly, at first was saying how they were in a gunfight. And the cops defended themselves. Obviously, just blindly saying what he hoped was the case. Blindly supporting before any of the facts were in. And this guy needs to keep his mouth shut until he has the facts. He should have said, we're still investigating. We'll get back to you. What's so hard about that? Obviously, something went wrong here. Now, the way it's being reported, the cops had no choice at all. They had to do this. And, I'm not going to pretend that I know how to handle a situation like this better than they do. But I do like to theorize that perhaps there was another way that could have avoided opening fire on a crowded street in rush hour. And that perhaps this is another example of badly trained or untrained cops. Like a couple of weeks before this, where they opened fire on a guy in Times Square for holding a knife over his head and walking backwards. This kind of thing happens too often. And now we're expected to accept the bullets of cops who are afraid for their own lives. How would that work in the other direction? You know, if I thought that I was about to get shot by somebody and I pulled out a weapon and started blindly shooting in all directions. How would the cops feel when I hit some of them? I don't think it would be treated the same way. But apparently, cops have license to do whatever they feel they have to do. And sometimes you got to question that. In this particular case, yeah, I do think I saw the video. There's a surveillance video of the guy trying to hide, walking around these giant flower planters on Fifth Avenue, and the cops coming up to him very quickly. Now, obviously, they don't want to lose the guy, but I do think there is a way that you can trail somebody. Apparently, the construction worker was able to do this for a block or so, not be seen. As soon as he told the cops, though, that's when things started to get out of hand. Now, was there enough time for them to put a plan into place and say, okay, we're going to tail him too and not be seen? I don't know. I honestly don't know, but this is something that should be taught, at least. In a situation like this, where you're on a crowded street, as a potentially dangerous person, do you, A, confront the person without hesitation and without regard for all the people that are standing around? Or do you back up a little bit, keep him in your sight, and just watch what he's going to do? He wasn't threatening anybody else at that point. He was just simply trying to get away. And obviously your goal is to keep an eye on him so he doesn't get away. But your primary goal should be that nobody else gets hurt. Now, keep in mind, you confront this guy, you run up to him and say, hey, freeze, we know what you did. He could immediately take a hostage on the street. He could start shooting wildly in all directions like they were reporting in the first place. So right away, that's putting people at risk because you don't know how to do your job. And putting people at risk because you're afraid that you're about to get shot. Now, of course, human beings are going to react. But we put cops on pedestals. We say that they put their lives on the line all the time. They choose to do this. And people walking down Fifth Avenue at rush hour, they don't. So I'm not so eager to just blindly accept whatever story we're fed. That there was no other thing that they could possibly have done, that this was the only way to handle it. Now, I think there were other ways to handle it. It was a difficult situation, no question about that. And I'm as untrained as the next person on how to deal with a situation like this. But it seems to me that NYPD reacts a little too quickly and with way too much force. You know, watch some old-time movies with gangsters and cops and things like that, and somebody pulls a gun. You hear the word "drop that." Yeah, basically, cops are kind of negotiating before they shoot. They don't do that anymore. They just shoot because they panic. And if you fire as many bullets as these guys did, obviously there's panic going on. They couldn't seem to hit their target. They didn't think they were going to. So they just basically kept firing. And, of course, those bullets go places. So, yeah. But in any event, it was not a mass shooting. It was a murder in Manhattan followed by police panic. And, you know, I say this with all sympathy to the people that found themselves in the middle of it. I know it's a difficult situation, but there are other people involved here, too, and I think that they're not thought of in that split second when you need to make a decision. Like, okay, here's a thought for you. What would have happened if as soon as the guy pulled his gun, cops said, okay, we're putting our guns down. What do you want us to do? You know, now, what would he have done at that point? Hopefully, pedestrians have scattered by then, seeing as how there are people waving guns around. He can't really take a hostage. So maybe he says, okay, I need to walk down the street and be left alone. Well, of course, there's cops everywhere, so he's not going to get very far. And there's more time to place yourself strategically and think it through. But again, you know, not being a cop myself, it's very hard to come up with these scenarios. But it's not so hard to say we shouldn't blindly believe what we're told. And just the fact that they had the story prepared before the story even came out, complete with fictitious information about how there was a gunfight in the street and the cops took this guy down. No, that's not what happened at all. That's not what happened at all. I just wish more people were asking questions. What happens to the people in the hospital now? There are still people in the hospital from this. Do the cops at least pay for the medical bills? We're pretty much told, no, you can't sue because you're never going to get a jury to go against a cop or the police department. You'll never get that. But will they at least be spared having to pour their life savings into their recovery? That's the real question. You know what? We should start a new feature just on shootings in Texas because, wow, it's something. First of all, this is about a shooting a couple of weeks ago. This is the one that happened when a guy was being evicted from his house near Texas A&M University. And in that particular case, they say that he fired more than 65 rounds during the incident. 65 rounds, more than 65. This happened in College Station. Police found four weapons in the home of the gunman, Thomas Alton Cafal III, and included a sniper rifle, an assault rifle, a bolt-action rifle. And he basically killed a cop and a bystander and wounded three officers and another bystander. And, that's your homeowner protection there gone awry. You know, just to get back to the New York story, too, maybe this can finally put to rest that theory that we see in so many parts of the country, Texas being one of them, that if everybody is armed, then this kind of thing can't happen. And just think about how that would have played out in the streets of New York. You know, if even the cops, these are the guys who are trained, supposedly, if even they can't take down one suspect without wounding a whole bunch of other people, what do you think a bunch of other non-cops are going to do when they feel they have to be Rambo and defend the defenseless? And bullets are flying every which way. Yeah, it doesn't work. Sounds nice, but it doesn't work. Okay, now, back to Texas. Sorry. I thought I had another Texas story. I guess I didn't. All right, I'm sorry, Texas. I thought there were more shootings going on there. There's one in Maryland. How about that? Okay, I know it's not Texas, but it's something. 15-year-old kid opens fire on the first day of classes at a Baltimore County high school. That was yesterday. And he got off two shots, wounded a classmate before being rushed by teachers. The assailant was taken into custody after the shooting and was cooperating with investigators. And they don't think he was targeting the guy that he shot. Basically, he walked into the cafeteria of the Perry Hall High School around 10:45 a.m., fired one shot before being grabbed by teachers, and another shot went off. He apparently acted alone and didn't answer. Actually, the authorities didn't answer questions about any kind of possible motive. They think he may have been bullied, and this was a way of dealing with it. But you know, how do you walk into school with a shotgun? I mean, that's something. I thought schools these days were like armed camps. You have to go through security and be seen by a lot of people. It's not like it was back in the old days where you could walk into school with a shotgun but people didn't do it for some reason. So that's Maryland for you. All right, how about this? It's not Texas, it's Florida. Close. And it has to do with the Republican convention. Basically, Tampa is prepared for demonstrations. They weren't really prepared for hurricanes, but they're prepared for demonstrations. They figure about 15,000 activists are showing up, along with the 50,000 delegates and various visitors at the convention center. And Tampa police, as opposed to NYPD, apparently have one message for the 4,000 statewide law enforcement personnel helping them out. and that is conversation before confrontation. We're going into it as a community-oriented service, said Tampa Police Assistant Chief John Bennett. And that was during a public forum held by the ACLU. In an effort to soften their image and keep cool, officers will wear khaki uniforms. How does that soften their image, wearing military fatigues? I don't know about that. And I'm not sure, keeping cool, does that mean temperature-wise or keeping a cool head? Not sure which they mean. But they'll be wearing that while working near the convention at the Tampa Bay Times Forum. Their focus will be on crowd control and traffic, helping people get around. Tampa Police spokeswoman Laura McElroy said, "We've said all along that by far the majority of protesters are law-abiding people and a small percentage are bent on disrupting the event." And the city is well prepared, though, if protests do get disruptive. In addition to paying for the new uniforms and extra personnel, it has tapped into nearly $50 million in federal security funds for an armored SWAT truck, a dozen all-terrain vehicles, riot gear, a fleet of bicycles, and surveillance cameras. Fleet of bicycles. Yeah, they're playing hardball here. Last Friday, they discovered bricks on a downtown rooftop next to a stenciled number 99 and the image of Guy Fawkes, 17th century bomb plotter, become a revolutionary symbol used by the Occupy and Anonymous movements. And groups opposed to excesses on Wall Street, internet censorship, that kind of thing. And authorities suspect someone stockpiled the bricks with the intention of hurling them down onto traffic or pedestrians to disrupt events surrounding the convention. Well, if this was the case, you would think that they wouldn't sign their name to it. Maybe it was a statement of another sort. I mean, if I was going to hurl bricks down onto the street below, I'd hide the bricks. And I certainly wouldn't put a signature on them that indicates who it is that wishes to throw bricks down on the crowd. So it's an idea, but I'm not sure that's exactly what we're looking at here. Now, here's the thing, though. They have what's known as the event zone. And I'm sure you've all heard about this before, event zones. These are like free speech zones. Again, we have censorship rearing its head, saying you cannot express yourself. But you can express yourself inside this little pen. And they really call it a free speech zone, because everywhere else is not a free speech zone. Everywhere else is basically restricted. The city ordinance has designated a parade route and public viewing area for protesters within the 8-square-mile event zone, and that viewing area is quite far from the forum, so the odds of anyone actually hearing you are pretty slim. But they have ordinances, even controlling what you can bring into the event zone, and things you can't bring in. Get this: rope, chain, wire, glass bottles, helium balloons. And masks covering faces, they are forbidden in the event zone. Now, you can wear a mask maybe along the parade route for if you're an officially registered protester. Yes, this is where we live now. Now, here's the thing. The city of Tampa has failed in its attempt to get the state to prevent residents with concealed weapons permits from carrying firearms into the event zone. And I think the whole thing is wrapped up by what one of the attendees at this ACLU public forum said. "So I can't bring a balloon, but I can bring a gun." Welcome to Florida. Ain't Texas, but it's something. And then you have what happened in Norway this week. The Anders Breivik case, where he was basically sent to prison, sentenced for the mass killing. That is a mass killing last year that killed 77 people. One guy killed 77 people. 33-year-old right-wing extremist They found him guilty of terrorism, premeditated murder for the series of attacks. He had a bombing attack at the government headquarters, which killed 8 people, then went on a shooting massacre on an island that was hosting a summer camp for young members of the governing Labor Party, killed another 69 there. Sentenced to 21 years in jail. Now, you know, that's simply non-fathomable in this country that someone who killed that many people would get anything short of that many life sentences. But in Norway, that's how the justice system works, 21 years. And, you know, there are people who are outraged by this, obviously, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of it. I'm seeing people basically accepting that that is how their system works and knowing that he's never going to get out anyway because he's never going to be found sane enough to not be a danger to people around him. And basically, he said at his sentencing that he apologized. He said he was sorry because he didn't kill more people. You know, not the kind of guy you're going to want to release in 100 years, let alone 21. So the statement, as it was sent by the country of Norway, by their system, is that their way of life, their standards, their values, they're intact. They're not getting hysterical. They're not calling for an eye for an eye and having all kinds of shrillness like we do here. They're acting in a calm, rational way, and it seems horribly unfair, but in the end, justice is served and society is preserved. And hopefully people like that are so few and far between that it won't be an issue again. But what would be worse is if the entire culture were changed as a result of this and turned into something ugly and fearful. You know, there was an editorial in Time magazine earlier this month that I wanted to read. Actually, it was by Fareed Zakaria, who does a program on CNN. I guess an opinion piece, not an editorial. The case for gun control. And this is interesting. This is said in ways that I could only hope to say. After the ghastly act of terrorism against a Sikh temple in Wisconsin on August 5th, Americans are pondering how to stop gun violence. We have decided that it is, in the words of New York Times columnist David Brooks, a problem of psychology, not sociology. We are trying to fathom the evil ideology of Wade Michael Page. Only several weeks ago, we were all trying to understand the twisted psychology of James Holmes, the man who killed 12 innocents at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. And before that, it was the mania of Jared Lafner, who shot Congresswoman Gabby Giffords last year. Certainly, we should try to identify such people and help treat and track them. But aside from the immense difficulty of such a task, there are millions of fanatical, crazy people, and very few turn into mass murderers. It misses the real problem. Gun violence in America is off the chart compared with every other country on the planet. The gun homicide rate per capita in the U.S. is 30 times that of Britain and Australia, 10 times that of India, and 4 times that of Switzerland. When confronted with such a large deviation, a scholar would ask, does America have some potential cause for this? That is also off the chart. I doubt that anyone seriously thinks we have 30 times as many crazy people as Britain or Australia, but we do have many, many more guns. There are 88.8 firearms per 100 people in the U.S. In second place is Yemen with 54.8, then Switzerland with 45.7, and Finland with 45.3. No other country has a rate above 40. The U.S. handgun ownership rate is 70% higher than that of the country with the next highest rate. Wow. The effect of the increasing ease with which Americans can buy ever more deadly weapons is also obvious. Over the past few decades, crime has been declining, except in one category. In the decades since 2000, violent crime rates have fallen by 20%, aggravated assault by 21%, motor vehicle theft by 44.5%, and non-firearm homicides by 22%. But the number of firearm homicides is essentially unchanged. What can explain this anomaly except easier access to guns? Now, confronted with this blindingly obvious casual or causal connection, otherwise intelligence people close their eyes. Denouncing any effort to control guns, George Will explained on ABC News that he had a tragic view of life, which is that however meticulously you draft whatever statute you wind up passing, the world is going to remain a broken place and things like this are going to happen. I don't recall Will responding to, say, the 9/11 attacks or any other law and order issue, for that matter, with a things happen sentiment. The other argument against any serious gun control is that it's unconstitutional, an attempt to undo American history. In fact, something close to the opposite is true. Adam Winkler, a professor of constitutional law at UCLA, documents the actual history in gunfight, the battle over the right to bear arms in America. Guns were regulated in the U.S. from the earliest years of the Republic. Laws that banned the carrying of concealed weapons were passed in Kentucky and Louisiana in 1813. Other states soon followed, Indiana in 1820, Tennessee and Virginia in 1838, Alabama in 1839, Ohio in 1859. Similar laws were passed in Texas, Florida, Oklahoma. As the governor of Texas, yes, Texas, explained in 1893, the mission of the concealed deadly weapon is murder. To check it is the duty of every self-respecting, law-abiding man. Governor of Texas. Congress passed the first set of federal laws regulating, licensing, and taxing guns in 1934. The act was challenged and went to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1939. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Solicitor General Robert H. Jackson, said the Second Amendment grants people a right that is not one which may be utilized for private purposes, but only one which exists where the arms are borne in the militia or some other military organization provided for by law and intended for the protection of the state. The court agreed unanimously. Things started to change in the 1970s as various right-wing groups coalesced to challenge gun control, overturning laws in state legislatures, Congress, and the courts. But Chief Justice Warren Burger, a conservative appointed by Richard Nixon, described the new interpretation of the Second Amendment in an interview after his tenure as one of the greatest pieces of fraud, I repeat, the word fraud, on the American public by special interest groups that I have ever seen in my lifetime. So when people throw up their hands and say we can't do anything about guns, tell them they're being un-American and unintelligent. And thank you, Fareed Zakaria, for that amazing opinion piece in Time magazine a few weeks ago. Definitely have some problems, have some issues, and some things that should be dealt with. And hopefully we'll get there. But we won't get there by ignoring them. We won't get there by pretending these problems don't exist, or by trying to justify even more insane actions and responses. All right, you know, I honestly didn't mean to talk about this the whole hour or half hour, whatever we've been talking about. But, you know, there's a lot of it in the news, and it is interesting. And we do have a global audience that I know likes to hear where we are in these things. And it's always good to hear from people over there and people here as well with their perspectives. Agree, disagree, whatever. Feel free to write to us, otw@2600.com. And even though the conventions are a big waste of time, I'm still going to be watching them to see if anything crazy happens or if anything particularly revealing comes from how people on the street are treated. And I'm sure we'll be talking about that next week as well as the Democrats' turn. Till then, Emmanuel Four Off the Wall. Have a good night. We live in a political world, love don't have any place. We living in times when men commit crimes and crime don't have a face. We live in a political world, icicles hanging down, wedding bells ringing, angels singing, clouds cover up the ground.
fail. We live in a political world where mercy walks the plank. Life is in mirrors, death disappears up the steps into the living bank. We live in a political world. Courage is a thing of the past. The houses are haunted, children are unwanted. Your next day could be your last. We live in a political world, the one we can see and feel. But there's no one to check, it's all a stacked deck. We all know for sure that it's real. Political world, the cities of a lonesome fear. Little by little, you turn to the middle, but you're never sure why you're here. We live in a political world, under the microscope. You can travel anywhere and hang yourself there. You always got more than enough rope. We live in a political world. Thrashing about. As soon as you're awake, you're trained to take what looks like the easy way out.